Hello and welcome to another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 20th year. I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is Darren Dorsey, President and CEO of the Association of Gaming Equipment Manufacturers, or AGEM, to talk about the impacts of rising tariffs, the potential tax breaks under the One Big Beautiful Bill, and AGEM's annual golf charity event. Earlier in his career, Darren Dorsey was an attorney representing individual suppliers, but he has since taken on a much broader role in the sector by becoming executive director and subsequently president and CEO of AGEM in recent years. In 2025, suppliers have navigated an increasingly tricky business environment due to rising tariffs and other macroeconomic headwinds, though the AGEM index stock tracker has been trending steadily upward since 2020. Dorsey and I spoke in Las Vegas at October's G2E conference. We thank you for joining us on this episode of the Global Gaming Business Podcast. To learn more about Darren, AGEM, and all things gaming, head to ggbmagazine.com. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Pod by subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Darren, thank you so much for joining me. I know it's we're at the tail end. You know, it's we're at the finish line. You know, we're kind of still standing. But how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks, Jess. Good to be here. And it's day three, getting towards the end of day three. Yeah. So everybody's maybe looking forward to it being over. But there's still, obviously, if you go and walk, still a lot of energy out there, a lot of customers, a lot of engagement from folks. So that's always nice to see.
What's been your impression of the show so far this year?
It's good. Everybody's excited to get together. Always is a successful G2E. This one looks like another one. I know something interesting where we're sitting here now, that you're the dealer championship area. There's a lot of energy and on a quiet area.
While I was about to say, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't, impede us, but yes.
Yeah. But I know that there was also some really good content on the education and some of that conference program is good because there's a lot of issues affecting gaming that people like talking about.
So you are, what are you about 5 years now at the head of AGEM?
Or three. About three. Three, okay. Starting year four, yes.
And came from Ainsworth, correct?
That's correct.
So for anyone, and this is just, a general question, obviously. So from anyone who may be not familiar, what is AGEM? What is your guys' mission? Kind of what are you guys all about?
Okay, yeah, AGEM is the acronym for the Association of Gaming Equipment Manufacturers. It is the trade association for the global gaming supplier community. That is the large manufacturers that you see up and down with the brand names, IGT, L&W, Aristocrat, but also smaller suppliers, Incredible Technologies, those companies. Then you also have the suppliers to the suppliers, because those devices, if you go up and down this floor, you see that a gaming device or a gaming product or a gaming service, there are suppliers to suppliers, and those members, companies are all members within the AGEM community as well. As a mission, our job is to be there to, whether it's engagement amongst the supplier community on common issues, advocacy, regulatory outreach. We do charitable, philanthropic, and education initiatives on behalf of the industry as a whole, but also it's there to just be a voice on supplier-specific issues, because so many other gaming associations maybe have both operators and suppliers.
Sure.
We are the B2B, so the supplier side, and that's our mission, to help them and foster an environment where they can, whether that's communicate with regulatory authorities, communicate with the public, advocate for issues that are common to all those supplier companies, no matter if they're located in North America, Latin America, Europe, Australia, Asia, but that's our mission.
And it's funny, and I think you're spot on about the supplier world goes much farther beyond than just slot machines and table games. I like to walk through every show floor that I go through, and it is funny to me that I chuckle to myself sometimes when I'm looking at chairs and bill counters and everything that you may not think that goes into a gigantic enterprise as we're sitting in now, but it's very true. Everybody needs things, right?
Everybody, and if you look and there's something in that gaming and hospitality environment, we're talking about physical things, there's also software,
sure.
There's systems,
yeah.
There's floor management, there's cash, there's how you run your back of house. Those are also gaming supplier companies that provide services to the gaming industry as a whole.
So what's it been like for someone like yourself from going from these individual companies to now more of a industry-wide, you represent the industry as a whole? What's kind of been that like to broaden your scope a little bit?
It's been enjoyable because to put simply, is I get to advocate or speak for everyone generally, rather than maybe one particular company with one specific set of issues. And also there's not as much times where sometimes I'm a lawyer by trade and I was a general counsel at companies, and you might be in a more adversarial position based on contractual or intellectual property or competitive issues.
That's what you've seen recently.
Yes, it's part of the ecosystem. So I get to enjoy it because I think I get to, and more important to that, Jess, is that I like this industry. I enjoy being part of it, so I get to go advocate and go do things and speak on behalf and represent an industry and people and companies that I enjoy being around. So it's really a pleasure to be able to do it.
So let's talk about that a little bit more in terms of like some of the uncomfortable conversations, right? Because even though you share a camaraderie, obviously, as like, you know, kind of brothers in arms in terms of the supplier world, you're also competitors, right? And we've seen, like, obviously sometimes stuff boils over into the courts and stuff like that. So like, you as a kind of a industry wide head, how do you kind of like make sure that everyone gets along and, you know, keeps civil?
Yeah, I'd say we have a really good board of directors. It's 8 members from companies large and small. And we try to do things on a consensus-driven environment. And what I mean by that is we find issues that are consensus issues. But if we do come in from time to time where there is something that is a commercial or competitive difference within the marketplace, as AGM, we step back from that. And we just kind of step back and go, hey, there's not consensus. There's not a common thought about this. This is just not something that our association can take on. Perhaps they'll have to work through that in the marketplace, and that will work itself through. But I think that's part of my job, is to try to help navigate those issues as best as possible. That's kind of how we do so. We don't take something on unless there's common consensus about what the issue is, number one, and then also that it helps or assists or it speaks to an issue that's, it's not beneficial for one company, it's beneficial for all involved, and then what those companies wish to, how they succeed or growth or whatever those are in the marketplace, that's what the commercial marketplace is there to do. Competition amongst them all, but what are things that I can do and our agent board of directors can find that help everybody or speak to everybody or give a common approach where if we're taking something, we're telling a legislator, a regulator, or the press, these are issues for our industry, but these are common to all of our companies, not one specific company. And so that's kind of how we try to take that on.
Sure. So I want to talk about the index a little bit. And it's funny, of course, I would write down, you know, the August results, and then Paul sends me the September results like 5 minutes before I get here. But so I had written down August, which was up 5% month over month and 32% year over year. I think September, I don't want to be wrong, but it's like in the low single digits.
I believe that's right. Yeah, we just got compiled by our friends at Applied Analysis. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, just kind of generally speaking, like the index obviously is a big part of what you guys do. It's published and refreshed on a monthly basis. So who all, is every member included, every AGM member included in the index, or only specific ones?
No, just a handful of them that try to give a different perspective on size, domicile, trading, listing. One interesting thing it is, we are seeing fewer and fewer of the AGM member companies being publicly traded. Okay. If you see with some of the, there's a move with private equity and taking some of those companies private. So our potential companies that would list up the index is getting smaller by the year. And that's just a trend in corporate finance right now. And we try to find maybe another publicly traded company that would take one of those spots up when we work with the Applied Analysis. But they try to get a blend so that it's maybe not one area or listing specific, and even one or product specific. It's sort of a little bit of everything.
That's interesting. That's funny. You know, around the corner at the IDSA, Mark, he was talking to I was talking to him yesterday, and he had a very similar thing. He was like, you know, M&A and corporate finance, you know, it affects us. It affects our membership, like, in so much as obviously
it does. Yeah, it does.
So that's interesting. How many members are in the index? Is it 12 or?
I think it's about 12, 10 to 12. I think if I remember. And we just had two of them come off the index with the merge with the IGT, every merger, and so that's something that we decided to kind of have to navigate from time to time in compiling it.
Is it something like S&P where you're going back, like you're like one company might be removed and another one might be added, or like?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and Applied Analysis kind of helps us work through that and find those data and then be able to track that data and plug it into the index.
Sure. And it's funny, like obviously, a business is cyclical, things go up and down, but it's funny when you look at the age of the historical the index curve, and it's up. You know, yeah. I don't know, I'm not an economist, but it's a very, very big growth in the industry.
Well, when we look at commercial gaming, tribal gaming, whatever we want to call that bucket, you know, look over the last 25 years, there have been more and more places that have thought, hey, having legal and authorized gaming and gambling in our jurisdiction is an opportunity for both. You know, provides tax revenue, jobs, workforce development for those public policy initiatives. So it's more and more places. And as suppliers, our suppliers tend to supply all of those regulated environments. So when there's a new operation, there's a new jurisdiction, there's a new opportunity, it's AGM members that are already in the marketplace that are going to fill those. So I think that might kind of track how that growth curve over time, over a couple of decades, you can see that.
Sure. So let's get into another kind of tough topic, the big T word, tariffs.
Yeah.
Right? I would have to imagine this has been a big part of your time over the last, you know, X many months. But it's impossible right now in the country from a manufacturing standpoint to not be affected by it, or at least be considering it. So how are you guys monitoring the situation, and what has been kind of your interaction with members?
The interaction with members have been, there is no one with a silver bullet magic solution. Yeah. And they are managing this on a day by day, week by week basis, rather than a month by month or year by year basis, because it continues to be disruptive and uncertain. Yeah. And there might be a new deal announced depending. Sure. And then also that it doesn't necessarily matter, all companies are treated a little bit differently because they may be supplying and procuring their products in a different supply chain.
Yeah.
Coming from crossing different borders, they may have certain functions of manufacturing assembly may be taking in one country and then it's crossing another border, or it's maybe being manufactured within the U.S. So all those supply chain issues and your procurement to put things together, but then you might be then exporting that back to another place for commercial purposes, and then you're hitting the retaliatory piece on the other side of it for your pricing. So it's consistent with everyone. The answer is nobody has a silver bullet, we've got this worked out. What we've tried to do at AGM is at least keep the conversation alive.
Yeah.
And we've worked with some of our associate members that have experts and put on some events from time to time and give them, here's the overview of all of the deals right now. Our friends at KPMG have put on a couple of events with us, and it's good to just sort of share that information out there. What I can say is also in the longer term, we're just not, when I say we, the supplier sectors hold, the hard part of it is that we're not thinking 6 months, 9 months, 12 months down the road, 18 months. And what is the long-term effect from that? It's unclear. And no one necessarily knows when this will become more stable and stasis and consistent. It will come. The predictability and the timeline will become there. It will. We just don't know when that is and what that's going to be. So the other thing I would add, which is maybe different than the average consumer doesn't realize, if you're putting together a gaming product and you're manufacturing a slot machine, or you're manufacturing a table game or a whatever, you don't just go buy the component parts for that in 1 week. So they may have bought the supplies for these and are storing them in their warehouse, they're on their books, on their balance sheets for 6 months at a time, expended that cash 6 months ago. And it has a differential time on when you can actually commercialize it. And then when do you repurchase stock for what those orders might be 6 months from now, 12 months from now. It's a very long lead time to procure those component parts. And also it's a long manufacturing district commercializing that process. So the longer that gets, the more uncertainty there is.
Well, and I remember talking to people coming out of COVID in 22 and 23 and them talking about the supply chain impacts that had, and some of those still have not necessarily been resolved, in the sense of like they just had to make strategic changes, or we have to procure a different item. So,
right.
So those are still ongoing, and now you have this on top of it. But
and I would add to that point too, it's a really good point, is that's the other item today, is even if there is a solution or a mitigation strategy that you can find, which everyone is doing them, they're also not looking that to be a long-term solution. So no one is making any long-term strategic decisions on how to address it, because it might change again 4 months from now. And then that might have to undo something that you do today. So people aren't making any long-term decisions on that issue. And I think that's a similar outcome from the pandemic items as well, is you just didn't know when something was going to maybe become more certain.
Yeah.
And that's the world that they're living in right now on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis.
From a business perspective, is it one of those situations where, like, is it really one of those situations where, like, the impacts of this are being felt immediately in the sense of, like, costs are up right now? Or is it more of, like, a worrying thing that may not impact businesses in the immediate term, but obviously will longer term? Like, is it, like, where do you stand on that? Is it something?
It's a little bit different for everyone.
Yeah.
Some may be looking at right in that front view mirror, or front view glass when you're looking down the road. Someone else might have, hey, we made a procurement logistics decision in 2024,
yeah,
and here's what we did, and now, hey, we're in good shape because of this right now, but we haven't made this strategic for 26 yet, and now where is that going to be? I also know that the mood consistently amongst our companies is they're trying to do everything they can to not maybe impact long-term pricing, those things, but it's getting more difficult, and some are having to just simply do so and pass those on to their casino partners, customers, and that's going to have to work itself through in the marketplace.
Sure, and you know, as can be said for a great many number of things in today's world, we'll have to monitor it, we'll have to keep an eye on it. So another thing that's obviously affected everybody and the business as well, but the One Big Beautiful Bill, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, the headline grabby media thing obviously has been like the loss deduction for players, obviously, which is generates a lot of debate and everything like that. But I'm interested because I've also heard companies say that, well, there could be tax incentives for us, or there's benefits for us. But you know, so what kind of conversations have you had around those? Or you know,
the longer term is, you know, what the long term is, that going to change a strategic decision on, you know, if there's R&D and some good things in those bills that,
yeah,
for long term infrastructure and things that for US based companies, or maybe moving or opening up or standing up something, there's something to look at.
Yeah.
The harder part that tempers it is that stuff we were just talking about is, well, but by doing so, does that inadvertently create a additional cost, or how long is this, well, you know, where is this going to ultimately end up for us as a company a couple of years from now? So we're tempering that. The more effective issue, I would say, is these are things that, again, if they're good for our operator partners, if there's some good things that they want to capital reinvest in their properties and their floors and their products, we're going to be there. That's great. That's consumer sentiment. Our consumers, they're wanting to buy more, procure more, because they have a basis to do so in BBB. The more difficult thing is some other component parts, if you look at some technical items, is...
Yeah. And I'm sure there are many. It's like,
yeah,
900 pages.
Right. But even when it affects some of the gaming, and I know another top headline one is the change from the withholding number and whatever we'd say, the WGG or that. That's good. That's a migration. I know that the industry, the AGA, has been pushing that for a long period of time.
Yeah.
It changed that number, and it's gone up. There's still some rules that have to be promulgated, and
sure,
we're in a government shutdown right now, and it's a long time before any of that process gets worked out. But what I can say, the friction that the suppliers have to deal with is it's not just creating the change software, making sure things adapt to those. There's other incidental changes where they maybe have not changed. You might have some state regulations or some state requirements that did not change, even though the federal number changed. They might have them matched up for a particular reason in a hard-coded number. That's hard. The second one is we have to take a solution, but it has to be approved, deployed in hundreds of jurisdictions across the United States, and that's not an easy task. And so having to work with those operator partners and message that out is something AGM's trying to do. Is this is going to be a little bit, it will pass, it will work itself through, but what are some of the long-term, you know, friction that's there about having to work with our operator partners and how to implement these changes? It's not something that a gaming company can just show up at a casino tomorrow and deploy. It's still a very physical, manual process, and you have different companies with different products that are all interconnected on a casino floor, and we don't want to interrupt the day. You don't want to take your floor down for a day to go do this. So it's just sort of process and implementation issues that will be there in the months to come once the solutions have been developed, been approved, and can be deployed.
Sure, sure. And to be sure, you know, you know, if you're a supplier, maybe there's some concerns. If you're an operator, there are concerns. If you're a lawyer or a consultant, there's plenty of work for you.
There's plenty of work. That's true.
There's work for you.
That's true.
This has been great. Let's get out of here on something fun, something lighter-hearted.
Okay.
You're a big golf guy.
I am.
Talk to me about the AGM Golf Classic and what you guys do there.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great thing. Our friends at JCM, it's a member of AGM. AGM and the AGA put on a golf classic each year,
yep.
and JCM's team puts it together. But the beneficiary of that is the International Center for Responsible Gaming, which funds research onto gaming and gaming policy issues. It's really important. I mean, we try to raise a couple $100,000 a year, where they've been very successful to do so. And I believe this past year, another big success. And I believe it's gone over $3 million.
Wow.
It's been raised toward ICRG and those efforts. And it's a good time. Not only is it a good cause, but I think it's always something people look forward to on the calendar each year, like in late spring. It's just a chance for everybody to, again, spend a day together and put down their swords from a competition standpoint. Work all suppliers. A lot of operators do that. And it's really a fun thing to do, and it's a worthy cause, and we're really, really so proud. I can speak with Bill and the entire AGA team. We really love doing it. We're going to be continuing to do that. But we want to thank JCM for all their efforts, and I know I'm on the ICRG board of directors, and that money is there, and it's critical, and it funds something that funds things that are crucial to our issues in our industry today, tomorrow, and the years ahead.
And the ICRG is, they just went through a leadership change. Michael Sola is now
yep.
in charge, and they're going full speed ahead.
Going full speed ahead.
Where is that? What are the details for that? Where are you guys usually hosted, and what time of the year?
It's usually in May, the okay. golf tournament, and it rotates around in the Las Vegas Valley.
Okay.
This past year was at Rio Seco. Tends to be as a here, and then the year before that was the 25th, and so that was at Shadow Creek.
Okay.
So it rotates in an area, and I believe it's at South Shore next year, but it's a local Las Vegas area golf course, either a private club or a resort, and usually early May is usually when we try to target the date for hosting it each year.
Who's the best golfer in the industry besides yourself?
Best golfer in the industry. My friend Dan Farnan from IGT is pretty good.
Yeah.
Tom Gingoli from Konami is pretty good. But there's some other guys out there that can get it around. I think people play a lot of golf in the from time to time. And especially people that live out west.
Sure.
Weather's great. You can play year-round. You're not prevented from weather, things like that. But I would think Jingo and Farnan are pretty good sticks.
And when it's for a great cause, why not, right?
Absolutely.
Darren, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was great.
It's great.